Blog Talk Radio.
Start with different music, born and walk. That's who I am. That song one more time as I celebrate my birth mother on this day of my Earth Day entrance. 68 years around the sun, feeling grateful, blessed, and powerful. And that song to me reminds me of my mother's ancestors, who were mostly of Native American ancestry. They lived in the southern Illinois region of the United States. They built their own houses. They did not go to the reservation along with many Native Americans. They stayed in the homestead of Villa Ridge in southern Illinois, and my mother was born in Villa Ridge, and my grandfather built a home and established in a community and called Olmsted, Illinois. So I spent many of my childhood days in Olmsted, Illinois with my mother's parents, and my grandfather was a pastor. So my mother was raised in a very strict home with what she called a sanctified pastor. So I want to play this one more time, and I'd ask you to join with me in breathing, meditating on the words, born of water, cleansed and powerful, healing, and I am. The words I am are so powerful to define who we are in this confused society that we live in. But we're going to be talking about lessons not only from my mother, but from other mothers that I found on YouTube. And if you would like to tell your mother's story, I would welcome your story to fulfill the mission today, tonight, to honor our mothers in this month of her story. And on this day where I believe that every Earth Day birthday celebration should be honoring the mother who birthed you into this atmosphere called Earth. So let's listen to Born of Water one more time. Let's breathe in and out together. If you have a drum or a table, let's drum in our ancestors, my ancestors, Native American ancestors are always with me. My mother, Lillian V.V. Howard, I'm talking about the lessons from this beautiful, beautiful woman tonight. So let's do some breathing and usher in the presence of our ancestors, mother, father, all those life. Praise to the Most High, Yahuwah, who is my Savior. Hallelujah. How are you all doing this evening? I have had a wonderful, awesome day today celebrating the I Am in me, the I Am with a beautiful friend. And I am just thrilled and excited to be here to share lessons from my own mother. I believe every one of us should honor our birth mother on our birthday. because 9 months in the womb is something to respect and honor and be grateful for. My mother told me before she passed away, she was sick with cancer, and she told me before she passed that she wanted to abort me when she became pregnant with me. Now, when I tell people this story, they say, oh, how awful that is. But I actually celebrate that moment where I was sitting in bed with my mother, who was very sick, and I sat on the bed reading the Bible to her. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I read the Bible to her, and I looked at her, and she looked up at me. She said, is that the Bible? And I'm like, what? Here is a woman who grew up in a very strict religious home with a pastor as a father. And yet my reading to her on basically her deathbed, she didn't even recognize the words that I was reading. So that was one of those moments. And then she looked up at me and said, you know, I wanted to abort you when you were in my womb. And I thought, wow, see how the Most High overrides mother's decisions. So lesson number one from my mother that day, trust in the Most High, the Creator, who put us in the womb, who allowed our seeds to be planted in the womb. Trust, trust, trust. That's lesson number one from my mother. When she shared that with me, she didn't have to share that with me. Most mothers wouldn't even share that because they would probably think it would wound the person or hurt them or offend them or trigger them. So I'm grateful for that first lesson that she taught me, to trust in the Creator of the universe, because that's who overrode her decision that she wanted to abort me. And here I am, 68 years around the sun, and I am grateful for that first lesson to trust, trust, trust. That is, it hasn't been easy. But the longer I live, the more I trust, and the more I have faith in the Most High Creator of the universe and all the messengers around me, the birds, the bees, especially the bees, they love me, the bees, and then all the people in my life that the Creator has allowed me to interact with and have relationships with. So lesson number one, trust in the Most High, because mothers are confused many times, angry, anxious, stressed, and they make decisions based on their low-level emotions in the moment. But there is a Creator who overrides those feelings. When that seed has a purpose, I have a purpose here on this earth to, number one, be the mother of two beautiful sons. I have two grown men. I'm actually not their mother anymore. Our relationship changed a couple of years ago when they made decisions to do something in the arm. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm not influencing these people anymore. I'm a soul partner with them now. That's another lesson from my mother. As I realized, even my mother's relationship with me changed over the years. And that moment sitting in bed with her, I wasn't even her daughter at that moment. I was more of a soul partner who needed to understand the power of the Most High to override a mother's desire to abort that child. So I have some stories I want to share with you that are in line with this struggle that many mothers have to abort their children. They want to end these pregnancies because they're stressed, it's too much for them, all the reasons that mothers have, we can be really more patient and more loving because we really don't understand their deep feelings, why they want to do some things that they do. And there's a lot of guilt. And when the mother is miserable, this next story I want to share with you just highlights some of the reasons why they're miserable. And I understood why my mother was miserable, why she had deep hurt that developed in cancer, that her self-esteem was never built up in her life, in her young life, as the child of parents who were busy with a ministry and busy planting food, busy raising chickens, and they had the most beautiful farm where we had fresh eggs and fresh food every day. Being the fourth child, my mother did not have the close intimacy, I believe, with her parents where she could develop or the opportunity to develop that high self-esteem. So later in her life, which I'll share, the alcohol became her best friend. And part of my journey in lessons from my mother was to learn to let go of the sadness around alcoholism in your family. But here's a 10-minute clip I want to share with you about why mothers become miserable. This is just something I found. I found about four clips I want you to hear about the emotional energy that mothers hold that we can be more respectful of, be more appreciative of, and even be in gratitude for the mother's energy. I am so grateful for everything about my mother at this point in my life. No more sadness, no more misunderstanding, no more guilt, no more blame, no more judgment about this beautiful woman who birthed me into the earth. So here's just a little story about why some mothers get miserable and sad.
About a year ago, as I was finishing my research on motherhood, I came across The Feminine Mystique, written by Betty Friedan in 1963. The title of the first chapter is The Problem That Has No Name. As I read through the pages, I felt my heart bursting. I thought to myself, every mom needs to know what's in these pages. It helps give meaning to where moms were back then and where we still are today. Betty Friedan was able to interview these mothers who shared with her that they felt unfulfilled, alone, and ashamed to admit that they felt lost in the midst of motherhood. She called this the problem that has no name. The spread into suburbia with its green lawns and large corner lots was isolating for moms. Their worries over smallpox and polio were replaced by depression and alcoholism. Drug remedies, such as Mother's Little Helper, promised relief from boredom, unhappiness, and anxiety. Sure, we've come a long way since the 1950s, but the feeling of loneliness and lack of fulfillment is still the same today. In my practice as a child and family therapist, I have heard a familiar story over and over. Mothers who feel exhausted, overwhelmed, and lonely in their lives. I knew that I could relate to feeling exhausted and overwhelmed, but I didn't think that loneliness applied to me. Or did it? I thought to myself, I'm still best friends with people from childhood. I have a loving and supportive husband. I volunteer in my kids' schools and in our community. My calendar is booked with dinners and parties. So I thought I was doing okay, until one day something happened that changed all of that. A few years ago, after being in excruciating pain for 2 days, I drove myself to the ER. Once I was examined, I was immediately admitted into a private room where I turned the TV on and settled in for what I figured was going to be a long night. And despite the fact that I was in a lot of pain, I was actually quite content. I was laying in one of those reclining hospital beds. I had nurses coming in and checking on me. I had a warm hospital blanket on, and I was watching Sunday Night Football. I had no kids to put down, no dishes to unload, and no laundry to fold. It was just me alone in a room. And then I had a light bulb moment. I thought, oh, I've heard about this before. This is what people are talking about. I was having a hospital fantasy, a real life hospital fantasy. And it felt really good. But after I found out that I was having a kidney stone attack, the novelty did wear off. And I thought to myself, besides my family, who could I call? Who could I call right now to simply say, I am in the hospital, I don't need anything from you, no meals, no driving kids around, I just thought that you'd want to know. And in that moment, I realized that I was just as disconnected from my community as the mothers I see in my practice. I had gotten so busy doing what all of us do. I moved around, raising kids, and advancing my career. I was living my life in 60-minute increments, going from school to soccer, home, and back to work. I was feeling lonely, and I didn't even know it. 50 years later, the problem that has no name is still with us. It shows itself differently, but it's still the same problem. Today, we have the rabbit hole of social media that shows what all the other mommies are doing better than us. If we're a working mom, we feel guilty. And if we're a stay-at-home mom, we feel judged. We second guess and stress over all the parenting decisions that we make, and all too often, we feel like failures and frauds. Got it. Somewhere in our frantic and overscheduled lives, we might have a husband with all of his needs and demands as well. Most of us somehow manage to maintain a career. Back in the 50s and 60s, mothers thought, if only they could have a career, life would be good. And earning our own money and having our own careers has been good, but the problem that has no name remains. If you're relating to any of this, you are not alone. I started researching and asking the tough questions. I found that since the 1970s, women have been reporting less life satisfaction than men. I asked myself, why is this? As I dug deep, one thing became clear. Women need closeness with other human beings every day. And this is not the same as casual connections. We are spending upwards of 30 hours a week online with at least 1 hour a day on Facebook. Yet I found that over the past 40 years, our friendship networks have shrunk. We move around on average 11 times throughout our lifetime, and shuttling kids around has caused moms to spend more time in their cars rather than socializing with others. And did you know that social isolation is hazardous to our physical health as well? One university study showed that patients were 50% more likely to survive disease if they had close friendships. And social isolation and the feeling of loneliness is a major health issue that increases your risk of death, more so than smoking or obesity. So what do we do? Do we say that this is the problem that has no name and therefore has no solution? I don't think so. In researching this topic over the last several years, I've come to think that if each one of the clients that I see in my practice had a best friend, my practice might be cut in half. We need to spend some of those hours that we're online with a female friend instead. As I've shared with you today, I wasn't immune either. So now, I reach out to others more. And even when I'm tired and I don't want to go out, I still meet that friend out. And we share our stories, because collective stories create community. And I've banned being busy. I won't let busy build walls that keep me apart from other people. Together, in our small towns or our large cities, we need to be a part of eliminating this problem. So let's start by calling a friend anytime. And when we kiss our kids goodnight and we're tired, let's still call a friend, even if just to say, how was your day? Let's get together with a friend, reach out to an old friend, make a new friend, resolve issues with people from the past. As I think about the importance of friendship for all of us, and especially in my own life, I'm reminded of this beautiful line said by Susan Sarandon in the movie Shall We Dance? And it goes something like, we all need a witness. There are a billion people on the planet. So what does any one life really mean? When you have a close friend, you're saying your life will not go unnoticed because I will notice it. Your life will not go unwitnessed because I will be your witness. Moms of all ages and all stages, this problem has been around for at least 50 years, and it's up to each and every one of us to make sure it's not around for the next 50 years. Thank you.
Listening to that woman's story, it sounded rather simple on many levels because my mother's story is so different. My mother had lots of friends when I was growing up, and they all loved drinking alcohol. That was the big difference in her household, in her circle of friends that may have been different from others. And then yet again, maybe not, because a lot of us grew up, especially baby boomers, we grew up with alcoholic parents, at least one in the household. And my mother happened to be the chosen one. And I say chosen because there's so many lessons from her journey with alcohol and being so dependent on it. My journey as a mother and wife was really predicated, I would say, or triggered from my mother's experience with alcohol and my sadness responding to it. I had a very sad experience with my mother as a young child, watching her always drinking and going to bed early because she was so intoxicated. And so that relationship with her suffered. The closeness, the attachment that young people have with their parents suffers when you have an alcoholic parent in the house. So we grow up thinking we don't want to have that experience anymore, so guess what? We become more controlling. I became a very controlling mother, a very controlling wife, because I wanted to avoid the sadness that I experienced with my own mother. And I really promoted a healthier lifestyle in my household as a mother and a wife. And it actually pushed my husband and my two sons away from me, because most people don't like to be controlled, especially at the level I was controlled. Well, you got to eat this. You can't do this. You have to behave a certain way. So my effectiveness as a mother and a wife was interfered by my sadness being triggered from my mother's alcoholism. Every time someone made a decision that I thought might hurt them, kill them, or harm or weaken them, I was right there trying to control them. So lesson number two for me from my mother was stop trying to control people in your life and allow lesson number one to take over, trust. Trusting in the creator of heaven and earth, the persons you're in relationships with will be just fine if you can let go of the control. That type of attitude can help us live a less stressful life, because we're not in this constricted, nervous, got to have my way, got to have things go my way. And so this was the gift from my mother to have experienced her addiction and realize that her death after a long journey with that alcohol happened anyway, despite my efforts to try and prevent it. It happened the way it was intended to happen on the date it was happened, and I was just blessed to be able to come through her womb to give my family and my friends now the heartfelt love and appreciation and gifts that I have to give to them. So those two lessons, first and foremost, are with me now. Trusting that everything will be okay no matter what we're going through, and that even these mothers that were talked about in this last audio who don't have friends, this is motivation for me to reach out to those who are conscious, who are have the same beliefs, the same likes, dislikes. And then be careful about those friends who are not looking out for your good. And that's what I found with my mother. When we come back, we're going to play another testimony where the guilt comes in, unleashing the guilt about how we interact with friends and family and how we can get rid of that guilt, because it interferes with our relationship. So we're going to take a break. Thank you. Naima Latif is in the studio, and she's going to take us to some commercials, and we'll be right back after those commercials with more lessons from my mother and other mothers.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viata.
Central Time, here on the Female Solution Global Radio TV show for Neighborship of Joy.
We'll have powerful conversations inviting women to walk in the light.
So call in 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak to the host.
You can also join us live on the Female Solution Facebook page and YouTube channel.
We'll see you on the second Saturday on the Neighborship of Joy.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit Zelda Speaks mindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsmindfulnessmomentsm mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Vyasa, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom. And we're back. Thank you for joining us this evening. I am actually live on both my Facebook pages, my personal Facebook page, Vieta or Viata. You can find me there, Robinson. And I'm live on Soul Purpose Healing Facebook. And I'm here in the Female Solution blog talk studio, as well as Soul Purpose Healing. You can call in at 215-383-5863. Give us your name and phone number, your name when you call in, and express your comment. I'd love to hear from you about lessons from your mothers, because this is Her Story Month, and we want to honor female energy this month and learn lessons from it more than anything. And we have a comment from our my sister, Zelda, of Monday Morning Mindfulness, and she says, "Grand evening, beautiful queen sister. How fortunate you are to have had a mother's love. Many of us didn't." That is just so true. We had many people that I know had women in their lives who were not their birth mothers, but they played a role of either nurturing or disciplining or harming them, abusing them. They played a role in their young life as a mother, good or bad, you know, depending on how you want to look at it, but the lessons are still there. That's what I'm doing this show tonight for, to share. Even though our mothers weren't perfect, we still have lessons that the Creator gave us to help us grow, to help us evolve, if we choose. If we choose to look at the experience and the relationships of the women and the men, but we're talking tonight especially about mothers, because on my Earth Day tonight, or today, I'm thinking of this woman who carried me for 9 months. My dad didn't do that. He had another role to play, but my mother carried me for 9 months. And in answer to respond to Zelda's comment, my mother's love showed up in the way of food, cooking. My mother could cook. I mean, we came home from elementary school. We walked 3 blocks to school, came home for lunch. My mother would have hamburgers, cheeseburgers, homemade fries, just the best lunches you could imagine. She knew how to cook. Everything was seasoned well. We had gumbo just about every month. She was cooking gumbo. So my mother's love was shown to me in her cooking. She always had a meal for us, even in her alcoholism. Chitlins. I can remember my mother cleaning chitlins, and she was drinking her beer and her whatever while she was cleaning those chitlins, having her her alcoholic moment. But she cleaned those chitlins because it was almost as if she was just brainwashed or in a trance that I have to cook for my family no matter how I feel. And so she did that faithfully. That was my mother's love, Zelda's. And so, yeah, I'm blessed that type of energy
I experienced as a child. I never went hungry as a child. Some people may have gone hungry. I never had that experience, but other people probably missed a meal or two. And those who didn't have the, quote, mother in their relationship as a child, well, the other relationships I see now were just as valuable, because they made you into the unique person that you are today. And you wouldn't be who you are if you had a mother. Let's just think about that, that there would be no Zelda Robinson that we know, the superstar who has done radio broadcasts, who's done so many things, who's doing homeless ministry. There would not be, I think, the person we know, or even the other people in my life who didn't grow up with mothers. They wouldn't be who they are if they had the, quote, mother role in their life. So it's something we could discuss or debate about, but I think something to think about when you have a mother's love, what does that mean? It would be really interesting to hear from some of you, what was your mother's love? My mother's love was food, cooking. I don't even remember my mother hugging me much in my childhood, not much at all. I can look back and think, no hugs, no kisses, but there was food. There was always a meal, and then we went into TV dinner. So that was a whole other interesting relationship. The TV dinners were there in the view. Now you're old enough to put that TV dinner in the oven and have your Salisbury steak and whatever else was available. But thank you, Zelda, for that comment. And Hari Simran calls him my dear, dear friend and sister, says, happy birthday, my beautiful divine sister. Yes, we are sisters indeed. And I'm so grateful to have Hari Simran in my life, along with so many other women we have talked about our mother roles. In fact, Hari Simran and I were talking about our roles as mothers in Costa Rica and how they change. And I had a conversation with Frances Harris. Thank you, Frances, for your greeting. And Darlene McCray. I was sitting by the pool with a friend who was my sister's hospice nurse, my friend Dee Dee. We were sitting by the pool watching these children and just reflecting on our changing real roles as mothers. And now we have to sit back and observe these children without judgment. We are now in a non-judgmental role with the young people who we birthed from our womb. We can no longer influence them to the degree that we did when they were young children. So it's always interesting. And just as I played in that earlier clip about having friends, having support, women, mothers feel miserable many times because they don't have any friends or support. And how important that is to just sit by the pool with a dear friend and talk about, you know, our roles have changed. Now that we're in our 60s and 70s, we got to think about these roles we're playing. So let's really... The lesson, again, from my own mother was, don't have a lot of friends who love to go and drink and at bars and go partying, but choose your friends wisely where you can grow together and have conversations that are uplifting. It's so nourishing to have friends who are not drinking alcohol all day, but who are having conversations. And that was the moment I had with my mother before she passed, that precious, precious moment where my mother was not in her alcoholism, but we were discussing that I wanted to abort you. Oh, really, Mom? Okay, let's talk about it. So those are the moments that were really precious and that really showed her love in a unique way, that she would share something like that with me that helped me to grow and understand my relationship with the Most High Creator of the universe. So we've got a caller with their hand up. So let me open up the mic. I want to hear from you about your own mother relationships and how it's helped you to grow, as my mother's alcoholism helped me to grow. And I'm actually very grateful for that experience that has helped me make wiser choices today. So let me open up the mic to 779-801. Your mic is open. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Greetings and happy Earth Day today. Today's your birthday?
Yes,
mine was yesterday, the 11th.
Yeah, that was my, you know what, that was my wedding anniversary. If I was telling my son, if I stayed with your father, it would have been 40-some years today on the 11th. But how funny. We're all connected with these.
You went out.
Yes,
are you there? Yes, this is Maika. You went out.
Okay.
I think everybody's mother is special, but when I hear people talk about their mothers, I realize how special she was. She was a Gullah woman, so she was very Africanized. The Gullah people off the islands of South Carolina were very Africanized because they didn't have to interact with white folks at all. You know, they traded rice with the mainland, and they never were confronted with the cruelty and ruthlessness and greed of white folks. They didn't experience the castrations and the hangings and all the other stuff, so that's not in our DNA as an experience. And as an Africanized woman, she had me when she was 40. So by the time she was 40, she had done all her street running and I guess whatever else she did in her earlier life that most women do. And all she really wanted to do was take care of her two children, me and my brother, who was 2 years older than me, and my father. So she was a homemaker. She was a real homemaker. She knew how to cook and bake, sew, crochet, clean, take care of children. As a matter of fact, she was a baby whisperer. She was the type, and she passed that on to me and my children, my daughters. A baby whisperer can understand what's going on with babies when they're in trauma and stress and what have you, and figure that out. So she was like that, and she was in all my children's lives. That's what I'm really grateful for, that they all had a chance to experience Louise Edmund. And the thing, I guess the greatest problem she had was she dropped out of third grade, so she was basically illiterate. I actually had to teach her how to read and write and do math. So that's that's what I learned how to teach when I was teaching her. I'd bring my lessons home from school and I would teach my mother what we were taught that day in class. And that's how she learned. So she was there for me. I remember she didn't tell me a lot of things. She couldn't tell me a lot of things because she didn't know a lot of things. She had what they call mother wit. She was just, she knew what to do with her children and her husband and the household. So in that sense, she was very wise. And I really appreciate and love her to this day for all that she gave to me. She gave me all. I remember my mother used to sing lullabies to me at night to get me to sleep. I remember her voice singing to me. And she gave me, I was thinking about people. It's, you know, I don't really spread my birthday because it's not a big thing to me. You know, every day in my life, every year of my life, for 15 years, I had a birthday party. So, you know, my birthday has always been celebrated. I don't have any voids in that area, whether people say it or not. But people came and really, really thanked God for my birthday, my Earth Day yesterday, and I appreciate all of them, family and friends, and gifting me. So coming up, I realized that I'm not the type of person who needs attention either. I don't vie for attention. I still got attention in the bulk from what I got as a child. And when we go down south to visit my father's family in Arkansas, Wynn, where Zelda's from too, she would cook, you know, food to carry in the car. And that was just always such a joyous treat because she was such a great cook and baker. And we stop on the road and have our little meal. I didn't know at the time that we couldn't go to restaurants. I was glad we didn't go to restaurants now because we had our mother's feast. And she always made sure that we had everything that we needed. One of the things I remember as a child was that she'd bundle me up in the winter. I'd be too hot. I didn't get cold. I'd just be sweating because she bundled me up tight. You know, it was like, wow. I remember that as a child. Why she got me all wrapped up like this? But she was very, and then she was good in healing also. She was a healer. She was a natural healer. She knew the herbs and all the remedies that, you know, came out of the South, came out of Charleston, South Carolina, in there, not Charleston, but, you know, the island. So that's my memory of my mother, just a joyous mother, a beautiful mother. And she was an honorable woman. She didn't run around and play around, but she was a fierce fighter, too. That's the one other thing I remember her. I remember one time me and one of my friends got into a disagreement, and she got into it, the same disagreement with the mother, and it was like, oh, I can't tell her when I'm having a problem because she just go off on somebody. And I didn't understand why she didn't interact with other mothers. I didn't realize the difference in age. She was at least 20 years older than the other mothers of my friends. So that was a problem. That wasn't a problem, but that was one of the things why she stayed to herself. She loved animals. She had a green thumb. I remember one day I came home and my mother had a plant. I was looking at her plants in the room, and I said, Mom, isn't that marijuana? She said, yeah. I said, Mom, that's against the law. She said, well, I like the plant. I just like the plant. She didn't. I like the way the plant looked. You know, she didn't smoke. She didn't drink. She didn't do any of those things, but she loved her plants, and she wasn't going to move her plant out the window either. So she was artistic, extremely artistic, just beautiful. So those are the memories of my mother, and I thank God for it, and I would that everybody had a mother like I had.
Yes, indeed. So what do you would say is the biggest lesson from your mother that has helped you evolve and grow into the beautiful queen that you are?
You know, I heard you ask that earlier of the people in the audience, and I'm still thinking about that. She gave me confidence to be myself and to not back down and be afraid of anything or anybody, because my dad was a fearsome person. He was, everybody was my dad, and he had these bully tendencies, but my mom was the only one who wasn't afraid of him. She only had to bow to the point that she needed him as a man during that era, you know, in terms of money and stuff like that, bills, and because, you know, Mama Joy talks about how during that era you had to have a man to even get a bank account or something like that, you know. So
crazy.
Yeah, it was really crazy during that time, for real. And she just felt strong, that's all, and helped people and helped animals. She went out of her way to save and rescue desolate animals. So
yes.
Things I remember about my mother. And I guess you could say a lot of those traits have passed on to me because I do have a green thumb. I love plants and animals and children, and I love men, taking care of black men when they allow it to happen, you know. But it's like you say, you got to stand back and not force yourself on other people. Let people be who they are, and then when
they reach
out for help, then you can help them. But other than that, the change has to come from within. It has
exactly.
To.
Yes. Thank you so much. That's beautiful relationship and energy. I just feel the energy between you and your mother. And I've heard about the Gullah community and all the land that they had in Carolina. So did you have any opportunities to be in that, on that land, and to even own any of that land?
No, I didn't, because like I said, my mother was 40 when she had me. A lot of time had passed in terms of the Gullah development, and then her and her family, they moved to Philadelphia. And so when I was a real young child, my brother said we would go down to South Carolina and visit our family. But then I remember is being in Philadelphia, going to Philadelphia. Remember, I was too young to remember South Carolina. No, we didn't. But my grandfather, or her father, he owned the biggest theater in Charleston. And
ooh,
one day he let Harvey speak at his theater. And they burnt his theater down the next day. So that created desolation for my family. You know, it put them in another category. And then he died. I think he died from sadness as a result of losing that income base that he had.
Well,
he grew up.
Even in that, how resilient we are as a people, and how all these tragedies that we know happen in our family, but yet we survived. It's like,
right,
we can be grateful for all the tragedies, all the good, the bad, the ugly, because it was meant to teach us something. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's
obviously
just a beautiful,
it was meant because we are who we are because of all those things,
right,
having happened in the past.
That's so right.
Thank you.
You should be writing a book on that. It's a beautiful story.
I want to write a book about my mother and her journeys. You know, I really do.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Leading
that's
up to me and my family and what we've done, what the family has done. So
that's right.
I know.
Gone.
And you know, the other thing was in the Gullah, there was not the perversions of the plantations, the incest, the homosexuality, that didn't come from the Gullahs because we were more Africanized. We didn't lose our African spirit in our environment. And I can say that Michelle Obama, her dad is Gullah. Did you know that?
Oh, no. Never heard that before.
Yeah, Michelle Obama's dad was Gullah.
Beautiful.
And
did
even
she
the
have
Supreme
that?
Court
oh. Wow. Beautiful. Did she write that about that in her book?
I don't know where she wrote it, but that's you can Google it on the internet, that he was
right.
Gullah.
Okay. Interesting piece of information. Thank you so much for sharing that. And we've got a comment from Frances Harris. She said her mother was a private gourmet cook that she loved traveled companion, which she hated. So I couldn't get her to travel except in an emergency. Wow. What a personality that woman must have had to love to cook, and yet she had to travel with someone probably to make money. And you do things that you don't necessarily want to do, but hopefully we learn the lesson from even those types of relationships with our parents. So thank you, Frances, for sharing that. So let me go to another comment here on Facebook, Darlene.
Yeah, I'm going to click off. Mm-hmm.
All right, here. Darlene McCray says, my mother was simply the best. Woohoo! Let's celebrate Miss Darlene McCray's mom, simply the best. Sing that song, girl. She showed her love in various ways. She was a spiritual and wise woman. She often quoted her mother. She verbalized love with her grandchildren because her grands always said it to her. Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you, Darlene, for sharing that. Another very colorful personality that we can imagine that Darlene grew up with. And yet, as Zelda says, some didn't have that personality, didn't have that mother image. But they still blossomed in the role that they're playing today without having that mother. So I give thanks for all my sisters and brothers who survived that lack of relationship with mother. And we know the harm that it can do, but we can make up for it in other ways. We can make up for it by learning what was missing in our life, and then providing that to our children, our grandchildren. Oh, there's so many today. Look at our society today, how confused they are, the young generation. So much confusion. Why? A lot of it has to do with parents who are not in the house, and they were raised by the television, and nowadays they're raised by their telephones. So it's a little bit crazy right now, as we look at the influences of our day on this generation. Even those who have mothers, those mothers are probably working, and very few of them are mothers like Darlene maybe had, but we can all be more conscious. The key, I think, today is to raise your consciousness, your awareness of what is missing in our society, and how can I play a role to fulfill it. My sister, Zelda in Chicago, is doing an amazing work with the homeless community. I see her videos on Instagram and Facebook all the time, and I'm thinking, what was it that created a Zelda to help with the homeless the way she does? Well, we know one of the things that occurred was her own brother, who was killed in the homeless community over, I believe it was a heating element. And so that is always, death to me is always something that triggers us to do something very special and unique in our society. We fill in somehow where it's needed most. And I think I have to say I'm so proud of Zelda and so grateful that she's making a difference in Chicago, where it just seems unheard of that people would be homeless in Chicago below zero weather, but that's what's happening. Because we have these unconscious politicians, then we fill in. Even though someone who didn't have a mother in their life, they are motivated by other events that help them to do the most unusual and unique things that no one else would be doing. So thank you, Zelda, for the work you're doing in Chicago. And all of us, thank you for the work that you're doing, raising your own children and learning, teaching the lessons. We have to teach the lessons that our parents taught us, good or bad. And I'm at a place now, I don't even see lessons as bad or experiences as bad as much as they are just very powerful lessons to help us grow. So, Naima, if you're ready, let me see, for commercials, then we'll go, let me open up the mic of Naima Latif. If ready, we'll hear from Naima for commercials, and then I have some more testimonies.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
D Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Beautiful day. March 12th, 2023 is a 4. That's a 4. So I don't know if Eddie Harris is in the house, but 4 to me is about creative work. And I was born under the 8, a number 8. 3-12-55 is the number 8, which is always, to me, 8 represents infinity, sideways, and always represents to me new beginnings, number 8. Does anybody has any words about numbers 8 or 4? It would be interesting to look at that today, as those are the active numbers for me in my consciousness about, you know, why we're here and those numbers. Remember, numbers are the language of the universe. So I see a hand up. Mama is number 1.
Okay, sister, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I'm driving. We just left out of the gate of Miracle Valley, and Reverend Allen, A.A. Allen's number is, one of his numbers is 8. And I did some very, very interesting things that are going on, Dr. V, at this particular time. I'm not kidding you, girl, sister. Can you hear me okay?
Barely, but you're on the move. I know I heard you say you're on the move from leaving, what, Miracle Valley?
Miracle Valley. Did you hear that?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So tell us about your mother. What lessons did you learn from
Did you hear what? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Hear me?
Yes, ma'am. We should be home in about 30 minutes. But what I'm learning from my mother and Jocelyn, the medicine sister that her Reverend Allen called, I know my mother was a follower of not only Oral Roberts, but Reverend Allen. And she said to me, meaning my mom, she said, "Putnam, you continue because we are going to help you."
Okay. So that word from mothers to encourage you to continue and to always be there to help. I never, ever heard that type of information from my own mother, but I know I felt it, that she wanted to be that type of inspiration. But alcohol does a number on the brain, and most I know you appreciate hearing that from your mother. So go ahead. So Mama AZ is on the move again. She never keeps still. So we appreciate you stopping to share those moments through Arizona. And you are not driving because you got a lot of background noise. So we're going to, okay, we got Brother Ed Harris texting me. He's in the studio, but he has a Tuesday. Oh, my goodness, we send lots of love and healing energy to Brother Eddie with a two, or no, the pain. Let's see, I'm sure you're dealing with that as best you can, but lots of healing energy. Say a prayer for Brother Eddie Harris. He's got a toothache he's dealing with. Ooh, thank goodness I haven't had any of those. But the main thing with toothaches is stop eating. You cannot be chewing and have with a toothache. And then peppermint, clove oil. Clove oil is good for toothaches, peppermint oil. And just rinsing with salt, warm salt water. I hope you're doing all those good things. So here we are talking about taking good care of yourself, especially when you're in pain. So this next story I want to share with you is when people are overwhelmed with anything, whether it's a toothache or children, rebellious children, self-care is so important. And this next story just shares about the importance of self-care. And I'm always promoting fly first, love yourself. And that's what a lot of mothers sometimes don't do. They're thinking they're being selfish. But let's listen to a little advice about self-care for mothers.
And when I first learned that I was pregnant 7 years ago, my whole mindset shifted from one of me to we. I became obsessed, from getting all of the right prenatal vitamins to drinking tons of water to moving my body. Everything I was doing was for this other life form that I wanted to be absolutely sure was going to be healthy and happy. But I want to challenge you today. I want you to consider the notion that mothers not only could, but should be more selfish. Now, before you roll your eyes or laugh or judge, hear me out. Because I'm coming to you with this because I was a mother that was not being selfish, was not taking care of myself. I was doing everything I could for my son at the expense of my own mindset and well-being. And all of that came to a head one night. My son was about 6 weeks old. We were going through our nighttime routine. I had him in the bath. He's splashing in the water. And he's looking up at me with these beautiful blue eyes and smiling. And I just start to cry. I'm crying. And I'm thinking, Liz, what's wrong? Why aren't you happy? Your son is healthy. You're healthy. Why are you in such a dark place? And in that moment of darkness, my own mother's words came through, as they often do, don't they? I remember her saying, Liz, if I didn't get my run in, if I didn't do my Joni Greggins workout tape, I wasn't me for the day. And I thought, of course, I haven't been taking care of myself. You see, my mother was one who ran the household. She had four crazy children. And my dad was in the Marine Corps, so he was often deployed or working 18-hour days consistently through my whole childhood. So she was manning the fort. She was holding it down. And she was doing an amazing job. She was always such a light, a source of positivity and fun and engagement. It was rare that she brought out the wooden spoon. So I thought, okay, well, if a run is good enough for my mother, it's got to be good enough for me. I resolved in that moment on the floor to make self-care the priority in my life. I had to. I had to save myself. So the next day rolled around. I get in my workout gear. I lace up my shoes. I hand my son to my husband, and I head for the door. And as I'm walking to the door, I have this overwhelming feeling. I think you know what I'm going to say. That mom guilt. The mom guilt. It's as ubiquitous as the worry, which is also always with us. And I thought, oh, here we go. And I don't know if it's because our children are physically part of us for so long, and so when we separate, all these alarms start going off. But I just thought back to that night on the bathroom floor, and I thought, I can't go back to that. I won't. So I left, and I headed out on the road. And as I'm paddling along, It was rough. My muscles were tired. I'm already out of breath. I'm like a minute in. I have this other feeling welling up inside of me. It's one of joy, of bliss, of excitement. I'm getting it. Even as I'm talking about it now, I can feel it. It's back. And I was back with that person that has been with me from my first breath and will be there with me at my last breath. I was back with her. And it was magic. And I thought, okay, I'm on to something. And so I finished my run. I head back into the house. I walk in. And that sense of elation is literally just beaming out of me towards my son, towards my husband. He's looking at me like, who is this woman? I've missed her. But I knew this was it. And so the next day, I didn't run, a little sore, but I took out my journal. So I'd always loved journaling when I was little. So I'm writing, and I thought it would be a five-minute practice. It turned into 20. And everything, all of the worry, all of the stress, all of the, am I being a good enough mom? Am I doing enough? Was out of my body, through the pen, and onto the page. It was out of me. And after I was done, I felt that lightness again. I felt that joy again. And then I was off, you know, with the rest of my day. I was like, okay, this is what I need to do to feel whole and ready for the day. And I know not all mothers struggle with this. My mom obviously instinctively knew what she had to do to fill her cup. Another woman that I interviewed on my podcast, her name is Jo, she became pregnant when she was 16, and she was kicked out of the house. She was on her own with a new baby. And through that struggle, she developed her own self-care practices. She meditates, she says daily positive affirmations, and she works out. And her son is grown and out of the house, and she still does these things each and every day. And she is a source of light and positivity and generosity to everyone that she touches. So that's what I mean when I'm talking about selfishness. I really just mean self-care. And you don't have to change your whole life to do it. It can be done in as little as 5 minutes a day. You don't have to go on a week-long yoga retreat. You don't have to spend a bunch of money on massages. You don't have to run away with that cute guy from the grocery store. At least not initially. No, these are small, intentional practices. Whatever works for you, that you do every single day. It changes everything. And your children, who we all know, watch every single thing that you do, are watching this too. They're modeling their behavior from what they observe. If you are a person who actively takes care of themselves, loves themselves, they're going to do that too. And if you think that you don't have enough time, you do. I'm going to prove it to you. So I want everyone here to close your eyes and visualize someone that you love more than anyone in the world. Picture their face. Feel the emotion that you have towards them. Now I want you to imagine 5-year-old you, maybe running around the aisles in this theater. Call that child over to you and have them sit in your lap. Send that love that you just had for that first person towards that 5-year-old you. Feel it. And let's breathe together. We'll do 3. So deep breath in.
So that is just a beautiful lesson for us to practice if we choose to kick fly. First, love yourself. Just one example, I think, that we should all be aware of, mothers and fathers, men, women, that spending the time to meditate, to breathe, to take inventory of your stress level and then deal with it, so very important. We have a caller. I'm going to go to the Female Solution studio now. We have a caller in the Female Solution. So Naima Latif, if you'd like to open up their mic, your mic is open. 7797.
Yes. Well, hello there. I'm giving honor to God today. This is Lois here in Chicago,
Hi.
Illinois, in the South Shore area.
Hi.
Well,
how are you?
Hello to everyone. It's so good to be alive and just to know you and to know everyone on the station listening. how blessed we are today, no matter. And I just want to say, what do you say, happy Earth Day, birthday to your mother and not to you? Or I don't know what it is, but God bless you on this day, this special day for you, okay? And I want to say that for Eddie, I learned from the, I think I had the best dentist in the world, Dr. Baskins, and he passed away. But Dr. Baskins treated me from 21 years old, and I'm 73 as we speak. I'll be 74 in April. However, he told me on an emergency basis to gargle, to put the Listerine on the area, to put Listerine in your mouth. And then a lady about 92 years old said, put a tea bag on the tooth, and it will take the pain away, at least until you get to a dentist or whatever. So that's the one thing I wanted to say, especially for Eddie. And thank you all for giving me that time. Anyway, I don't think that we should take, my mother always told me, and I remember it to this day, don't take the babies to the doctor unless they have a temperature. She said, if they're teething, they're going to have a temperature anyway. She said,
right,
do not take your babies to the doctor. And then she said, whatever you do in life, put God first and you'll be all right. And those are things that I just remember. And thank you so much. But God is good. And we all are breathing. And we never know when we're going to take that last breath. But we are enjoying it right now. And thank you, Jesus. And thank you all. And again, happy birthday. This is
thank
Lois
you.
Here in Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you, Lois. We appreciate you so much. And thanks for that advice for Eddie, because there's so many things you can do to control toothache. You don't even have to go to a dentist. If you, number one, stop eating. That, to me, is the number one thing. You cannot eat. I don't care where that tooth is. Stop. As Eddie said, was saying, he's getting too much air in his mouth when he's talking. Well, the same thing applies when you start moving that jaw to eat. So what you have to do is just either use a straw and drink your food, or don't go do fasting for a while. And that will heal that toothache, I'm sure. As Lois said, Listerine. There's so many homemade remedies that can be applied. So, Eddie, we just hope you feel better soon, because we always love to hear your voice. And thank you for sharing, Lois. So Naima had a comment here that I wanted to post that she said, even though it was a hard lesson you learned about not being controlling, you were successful in ending the cycle of alcoholism in your family. So your sons did not have the experience of sadness that you had. That is so thought-provoking, Naima, what you're saying. In my youth, I was drinking and partying and smoking and doing all those things, but that relationship I had with my mother was always in the back of my mind as I don't want to repeat that. I don't want my children to have to experience what I did with my mother. So, yeah, it's true that in my marriage, both my husband and I, neither one of us had alcohol in the house even. We rarely had any even wine or any alcohol in the house. And yet this generation, oh, my goodness, it's like they skipped the wisdom and all the lessons, and they drink so much alcohol, unfortunately. But as I learned with my mother, it's not my job to control the behavior of adults. And even though I would throw alcohol, pour alcohol down the drain. When I was in the house with my mother all alone, and seeing her intoxicated every day, I thought it was my job to get rid of that stuff. And I would open up those bottles and pour them down the drain. And I'm surprised she didn't get angry at me, but she would just go out and buy more. And so it was a constant cycle of pouring the alcohol out, hiding the alcohol, and then she'd go buy more. Her addiction was strong. The lesson, again, is don't try and control adults. Their journey and their assignment is higher and hidden from you, the child, or even the other adult. So don't even frustrate yourself trying to control the habits and addictions of grown adults, even if they're your children. So we have to let all that play out. And as she was talking about, don't feel guilty about the things that you're doing for yourself. It's up to us as mothers to just take care of ourselves. And hopefully our children will see the lessons and learn from that. So thank you all for sharing. If you have any comments about your own relationship with your mothers, please press 1 if you're in the studio. The number here is 215-383-5863. And, of course, your comments are welcome on Facebook. So I do have another audio I'd like to share with you with Dr. Gabor Maté. And this is a man who I highly respect. He's a psychiatrist, a doctor. He's had over 40 years experience, I think, dealing with addictions. But he talks a lot about conscious parenting, and which is something I did not have. And so that's why I listen to his teachings and appreciate all that he has to say about conscious parents. So here's a little lesson or this is actually, I'm going to have to cut it short for the break. But here, listen to Dr. Gabor Maté, a professional, talk about attachments and which is what many of us missed when we had alcoholic parents. There was no attachment, no conscious parenting, and we struggled a lot with our own addictions and our own behavior challenges. Our triggers were there, but Dr. Gabor brings some wisdom and knowledge that I think we all should know.
If we look at childhood in North America right now, we can see that it's seriously under threat. We can see that in the numbers of kids being diagnosed with all kinds of behavioral, developmental, and mental problems. We can see it in the millions of kids that are being medicated. We can see it in the statistics that show that as many as 50% of American adolescents meet the diagnostic criteria for one or another mental health disorder at some time during their teenage years. We can see it in the frustration of parents who believe and experience that they've lost the power to somehow bring up their kids according to their own values, the impotence that many parents experience in the face of the culture. We can see it in terrible situations in the schools where kids are not learning how to read and write as they did decades ago. And then in the aggression in the culture and the drug use and so on. And if we're seeing this, all these problems arise on such a broad scale, we really have to ask what's going on. And it's not enough to blame individual kids for behaving badly, or parents for not parenting properly. Because if that was the problem, we'd see individual cases here or there, but we wouldn't see these problems manifest on such a widespread social level. And if we are seeing that, then we have to ask what's going on in society. And particularly, well, if you were looking at a plant that wasn't developing properly in your garden, you wouldn't start blaming it for making the wrong choice. You would ask what conditions are lacking: soil, irrigation, sunlight. Now, similarly with childhood development. So essentially, the question we have to ask is, what conditions do children need for healthy development, and what conditions are available to them today? Now, recent research done here in the States actually shows that the optimal environment for child rearing are hunter-gatherer societies. Now, that doesn't mean we all have to become hunters and gatherers. That's not going to happen. But what is it about those societies that facilitates healthy human development? Well, what it is the attachment relationship of parents to adults. And what you have in those societies are not just isolated parents living in a nuclear family setting, separate from extended family, separate from clan, separate from culture. But what you have is what the African saying asserts, it takes a whole village to raise a child. So children were meant to be parented in a much broader adult set of relationships, number one. Number two, if you look at what the brain development of the child requires, I'm talking about the physiological development of key brain circuits to do with stress responses, emotional self-regulation, impulse control, attention, decision-making, picking up on social cues. Those essential brain circuits for their physiological development require the presence of non-stressed, emotion available, attuned parenting caregivers. So what have you got in a society that destroys the village in a sense of the emotional attachments of children to many adults, that for the most part separates kids from their parents much of the time owing to economic pressures, that stresses the parents inordinately so that even when they're with their kids, they're very stressed and distracted. When 20% of women now suffer postpartum depression, where the maternity leave length for many women is 6 weeks, what can you expect in a society like that? You expect all kinds of dysfunction, maldevelopment, and behaviors that manifest severe emotional losses, which then typically we mistake for behavioral problems. But we're not talking about behavioral problems. We're talking about relationship problems between the child and the adult. And by making it a behavior issue, by trying to stop the behavior, we make the problem worse because we end up punishing these kids and attacking them and further eroding their relationship with us and their trust in us. As a result of all that, another dynamic that follows is that children who are programmed biologically to connect to somebody, they can't help it. They must attach to somebody. Their brains are telling them to. And consider for a moment how important attachment, which is to say closeness with another human being, is to even adults. And what happens to us as adults when our closest attachment relationships are threatened, and how disoriented and how upset we become? Well, the child is much more that way because he's much more dependent. She's much more vulnerable and helpless. So they can't abide not having attachments. But who will they attach to? Well, who's around? Well, who's around in our culture are the kids. So apart from losing their nurturing relationship with adults because of the pressures and social factors I've already outlined, then kids become connected to other kids. So for the first time in history now, you have immature creatures influencing each other inordinately. The result is immaturity, all kinds of behavior problems, all kinds of interferences with healthy development, and a whole range of behavioral learning and mental health issues. So this is what I mean. The culture is meant to maintain our attachments and to give us a place where we actually belong and where we can be supported. That's the traditional role of culture. Nature can only program us to be attached and to be connected, but nature can't provide the culture. That's up to society to do that. Now what happens in a culture when the rate of change is so rapid we can't even adapt to it? It means that we are disoriented, we lose our bearings, we lose our connections with one another, with our kids, and the result is what I began to delineate in the beginning, all these childhood problems, behavior issues, mental health issues, and a whole range of other problems, which of course manifest on the individual level and of course on the social level. And on top of that, then we have this culture in the narrower sense, which is to say the media, which reinforces those trends. Interestingly enough, if you look at most TV programs aimed at kids, adults aren't even in them. Or if they are, they're only present as laughable, peripheral figures. It's just all about the experience of the kids as separate from adults. So the culture reinforces then our separation from our kids. And on top of that then, we've given our kids all this technology by which they can now compulsively connect with one another, even when they're not in each other's physical presence. And so you got the Twittering and the tweeting and the text messaging and the emailing and the Skyping and the cell phoning, and you have essentially an alien peer culture that stands in separation and very often in opposition to the healthy culture that adults would like to pass on to their kids, but they've lost the power to do so because they've lost the connection. In short, what we've got is developmental disaster. Parents in a hunter-gatherer society don't have to know anything about attachment. Just like we don't have to know about gravity to walk on the earth. Gravity will just take care of us because it's there. Now, in societies where the attachment relationships are still working, the parents don't have to be aware of it. But in a society where it's no longer the dominant dynamic, in a sense of the culturally supported dominant dynamic, we have to become conscious of attachments. Because the culture is forever undermining our attachments. So that the first thing is that parents really have to be aware of the importance of attachment. They have to be aware of it from the moment that the woman gets pregnant. Because already the woman's attachment relationships, if they're working, will protect her from stress. And if they're not working, they will add to her stress. And already the stresses on the pregnant woman have an impact on the development of the child. And then when it comes to birthing, again, the attachment relationship needs to be vouchsafed. The attachment relationship of parent to child, of mother to infant. And what we've got instead is a highly medicalized birth culture in which increasingly people don't even give birth naturally anymore. And then there's more and more medical interference, separation instead of bonding. Well, that, if we were conscious of it, would make us rethink our birthing practices. And then you have a society in which maternity leave is 6 weeks very often, and whereas in any kind of rational culture, society would provide support for parents to stay at home with their kids. So instead of making it more difficult, we would actually facilitate it. And then we would support natural parenting practices, such as, for example, this breastfeeding, which is now a minority activity in this country. A relative minority of women breastfeed past a couple of months, and some of them never breastfeed at all. And yet, that breastfeeding dynamic is essential not just from the immunological, because of the antibodies that you pass on, and the nutritional, because of the nutrients that the breast milk contains, but also from the emotional bonding perspective. Especially for the human infant, who is helpless and immature for much longer. Basically, we're born much more prematurely than other mammals are, which means that the connection needs to be even closer for longer. And the British anthropologist Ashley Montagu coined the phrase exterogestation to balance interogestation. Interogestation is gestation inside the uterus. But he said that fundamentally, for the human beings to achieve the same level of development as other animals do at birth, we have to be externally gestated for another 9 months. And that would naturally, where possible, which it is in most cases, include breastfeeding. And then on top of that, we'd have to be aware that the more we stress people, the more that stress translates into neurological influences on the brains of their kids. So stressed parents are much more likely to have kids with ADHD and other problems. Stressed parents are more likely to have kids with asthma, according to research literature. Clearly, for reasons that are very obvious that I haven't got time to go into in this conversation, but physiologically they're straightforward. On and on and on. And
so Dr. Gabor gives us many, 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 many ideas about the complexity of conscious parenting and relationships with our children and attachment. And one of the last lessons, and I know Naima must be ready for a break. I'm going to open up her mic. So Naima, whenever you're ready, just go ahead. Your mic is open, and I'll be quiet. But I didn't get a text from you, so I'm not sure. But one of the lessons for me and my mother is that I became a doula because I realized being a good mother starts when the woman conceives that child in the womb. It doesn't just start after the baby's born. As a doula, my role is to support that woman even before she gets pregnant. Sometimes a doula can play a supporting role in helping the mother plan this pregnancy. So many women are not aware of the value of having a doula or having someone support them from the beginning of that pregnancy and through the 9 months and onward. We'll be back. Uh-oh, Naima's phone dropped, so she'll be back. So we're waiting for Naima to come back, and we'll play the last commercials. But I want to just emphasize in this last, the last few minutes we have, the opportunity for all of us to be doulas. Being a doula is not necessarily a professional role that you have to go to school for. It's something you can, if you desire to help mothers in their journey, it's something you can help prepare for even online or even on YouTube. So Naima, your mic is open, and if you want to continue with the commercial, our last commercial, and then we'll be back to talk about doula role for mothers, which is what my mother taught me, in that she did not have necessarily have the support that she needed before even that I was conceived, or even during her 9 months, the emotional
being active,
support.
Healthy, alert, and vibrant. Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of ourselves, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host, Kareem Hamid, every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our host. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
we're back. Thank you all so much for joining me this evening to celebrate my mother, who birthed me 68 years ago on this day into the Earth's atmosphere to have this amazing adventure that I've been having. And I'm now playing the role of grandmother. But as I was saying before we went to the break, I want to encourage all of you to think about your role as a doula in your community, in your family, where you are helping women who choose to bear a child for 9 months and birth a child, that they get support. That's really where it starts. When I look at mothers today who don't have that support, oh my goodness, we have a high death rate among the Black community for prenatal and post delivery. So the key, in my opinion, is that we all take on the informal role of being a doula. And all the doula job is to support that woman in her pregnancy, especially in her emotional state. It can be especially difficult if the father is not in the relationship. And so we can still bring in healthy children and help mothers to have healthy relationships. If we follow the wisdom of Dr. Gabor, it says it takes a village to raise a child. And I think as Maika pointed out in her family, that was happening in her family. And many of us have had the privilege and the honor of having a village raise us. I know in my situation, I'm thankful that my mother had a sister who married a man, Uncle Mark, was in my life, who really raised my sisters and I when my dad was off playing football. This guy behind me played professional football before I was conceived. If it weren't for a shoulder injury that my dad received in playing for I think it was Cleveland Browns, I probably wouldn't be here because he was always away. But my Uncle Mark was the village. My Aunt Lynette was the village. My Aunt Othel was the village. There were lots of people in my family who filled in where my mother or my father were unable to at different times of my development and growth. So I encourage you to think about your role as a doula, unprofessionally or even professionally. You can always train to become a doula and then practice that and make money out from this profession, helping women to be hired by women to coach and support them in their 9-month pregnancy and then in the delivery and the postnatal experience. It's a very rewarding job to have, because you really do see how it makes a difference when you can have that interaction and that relationship with these mothers to be struggling. So one of the keys, though, that I have that has helped me is developing emotional intelligence about my mother and her alcoholism. And developing emotional intelligence is about not being triggered when you have the pain show up again and again from what you felt growing up with an alcoholic mother. So here's a little a short reminder about developing emotional intelligence. And that's what another lesson from my mother. She helped me to develop emotional intelligence because you're sick and tired of being sick and tired of the pain that keeps surfacing when you're triggered about alcoholism or the lack of attachment or relationships that were very poor in my childhood. So emotional intelligence is key. We want to develop that. And here's some information for you about developing emotional intelligence that will help you stop being triggered and learning to respond instead of react to situations that remind you of the challenging relationship you may have had with your mother.
Emotional intelligence refers to the ability to recognize, interpret, and process emotions in yourself and others. While genetics, upbringing, and environment all play a role, there are steps you can take to develop your emotional intelligence over time. Get to know yourself. Emotionally intelligent people are self-aware. They have a realistic appreciation of their strengths and weaknesses and how they come across to others. Peer feedback is one way of improving your self-awareness and may uncover a few of your emotional blind spots. Learn your triggers. Linked to the notion of self-awareness is knowing how you are likely to respond in particular situations. Think about how you felt the last time you were under pressure. Did these feelings help or hinder you? Recognizing emotions and the source of these emotions can shift your emotional state. Empathize. Seeing things from someone else's perspective will help you understand their values and beliefs. This is important when it comes to motivating and engaging others. Make a conscious effort to get to know your colleagues. Ask open questions and actively listen to what they have to say, rather than simply waiting for your turn to speak. Be on the lookout for body language and other non-verbal signs, as these may tell you more than someone is willing to express out loud. Own your emotions. Part of being emotionally intelligent is about taking responsibility for the way you interact with others. If someone upsets you, pause and reflect on why their actions led you to feel this way, instead of reacting impulsively. Recognize that a conversation is a two-way interaction, and it takes two people to make you angry, sad, or frustrated. Go with your gut. Finally, listen to your body. If your stomach starts doing backflips every time you speak to a senior manager, or your muscles tense up before you go into a meeting, what does this tell you? Counterintuitive as it might seem, emotions can be a valuable source of information when making rational decisions at work. Remember, emotional intelligence isn't about suppressing emotions. It's about learning how to recognize, process, and channel them in a way that benefits you and your team. Enhancing your emotional intelligence requires effort, but it can be achieved with sustained practice.
So thank you all for joining me, and I want to remind you, tomorrow Zelda will be welcoming community activist Dr. G, celebration of women, Monday morning mindfulness at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time right here on the Female Solution Blog Talk radio station. So we want to end with a meditation tonight, because developing emotional intelligence is not easy. That was one of the lessons that our mothers, I think all of our mothers, the relationship we had with them, good, bad, ugly, we are now, if we're adults and our mothers may have passed on, even if your mother is still in your life, I'm sure mothers trigger you and they have triggered you, and we want to come out of that trigger into love and respect and gratitude for our mothers. And even if that role of the mother was not in your life, let us even be thankful for the persons, the people, the men and women in our life who guided us into the beautiful souls that we are today, becoming more conscious. So thank you all. Let's do a little meditation together, collectively, raising our consciousness about who we are and why we're here, and working every day to show more love, to our fellow human beings.
Earth, my body, water, my blood, air, my breath, and fire, my spirit. Earth, my body, water, my blood, air, my breath, and fire, my spirit. I like to sing to the earth, I like to hold. She likes to sing to me, she likes to hold me. I like to sing to the earth, I like to hold her. She likes to sing to me, she likes to hold me. I carry fistfuls of leaves, I make love to the breeze, I carry fistfuls of bones, I trust they will lead me home. I carry grief on my wings, I know a caged bird. Through many turns of this moon, my women have suffered wounds. But my grandmother's with me. Close your eyes, can't you see? And my grandchildren are here. The rose, the crow, and the deer. I am surrounded by light, the light of stories. I need to quiet my mind, I need to listen. We are surrounded by light, the light of stories. We need to quiet our minds. Earth, my body, water, my body, air, my breath, and fire, my spirit. Earth, my body, water, my spirit. Earth, my body, earth, my body, water, my blood, air, my breath, and fire, my spirit.
For all my
we've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can also reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Listen to our radio shows. Order our book and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy. Grazie. Egypt.
Yay.
Shukran. Ghana. Medasi. Nigeria. Eshe. South Africa. Ngiyabonga. Senegal. Geret. Kenya. Asante. Israel. Toda. Pakistan. Shukriya. Afghanistan. Tashakur. Saudi Arabia. Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.
And you have a beautiful week.